Efferent Dark Saga is a dark fantasy audio drama. It contains themes of violence and is intended for a mature audience. Listener discretion is advised. Chapter 1, Part 8, Sigmere. After being forced to see the nightmarish fate which lay in store for his homeland, the settlement known as Isaac's Hill, Sigmere fled into the night alongside his saviours Kreia and her squire Braedic. After riding hard for 2 days, the trio made plans to stay overnight in a nearby village called Eastwold. Making their way for the surrounding Shalewood, they finally reach their destination. Sigmere noticed how quickly the woodland changed. Within the space of a few footsteps, the vibrant green foliage and dense undergrowth stopped abruptly. Instead, barren soil with half-rotten trunks, branches like starved limbs reached up, bare of leaves and blackened, like the burned arms of a fire victim. The world felt heavy here. Whatever had caused the rotting of the Shalewood had left its mark upon the very air they breathed. Kreia stared at Braedic, her eyes burning, a look of anger contorting her tattooed face.
How was I supposed to know of this?
With a dismissive hoof, she wheeled the horse around. The mount also seemed to sense something and would not proceed. Kreia put her hand on its brown coat as a motion to soothe the creature.
What has happened here? I have never seen the woods like this before.
I have some idea, but best be quiet for now. Just stay close.
Sigmere nodded his understanding. With Kreia now leading the way, he fell in line behind her, Braedic holding up the rear. The woodland was silent. Just the sound of hooves crunching twigs and sticks, as well as the occasional clink as horseshoe met rock. This was very strange indeed. He was used to the woodland. In fact, this very forest stretched as far as Isaac's Hill. Yet here, it seemed like an alien place. The bare bones of the trees unnerved him. The lack of animals, even blood-sucking flies, which alone was a blessing. Staring straight ahead, Sigmere became lost in his thoughts again. This time, what he was going to do when he finally reached Kalimdor. He'd never set foot in a village before, let alone a city. And if what he heard was true, Kalimdor was unlike any other. He smiled, excited at the prospect of getting his hands on yet another book. Surely he would find one in the Crown of the North. Perhaps in this village. If he had time, he'd make a point of asking. Though what he would trade for it, he did not know.
Braedic, do you think they will have books in Eastwold?
You're more likely to find a library in a pigsty than one of these backwood villages. I'd be surprised if anyone was capable of reading here. What do you know of books? The tribe's people don't read either.
I have a book. Well, I had a book. I couldn't read it, but I always wanted to learn.
You don't exactly look the sort to be a scribe. But perhaps we could teach you a little. You'll have to learn to read if the Order accepts you regardless.
I would be very grateful.
Continuing on, he gazed vacantly, lost in his imagination, thinking of what wonders he could learn, what stories could be told. His eyes transfixed upon Kreia's back, mesmerized by the swaying motion of her long ponytail, as it moved, almost in unison with her mount. Coming to an abrupt halt, he was snapped out of the daze. Glancing over Kreer's shoulder, the young Ven could see a muddy path, sodden and waterlogged. It led off in the direction of Eastwald, or at least in the direction Braedic had said it would be. A waist-height wooden fence ran the border of the road, separating it from the woodland. Its old timber, green with mildew and algae, one section in particular, was covered both atop and below in bird droppings, though there was no sign of life, avian or otherwise. It wasn't long before the village came into view. Greeting them was the town gates. They, like the fencing before it, were green and in disrepair. No militia to see them in, as they expected. In fact, no signs of movement at all. The long but wide gate swung on the breeze, its rusted hinges creaking as it did so.
"This is the village? Where are all the people?"
Kree's face bore a worried look. Her eyebrows furrowed. She raised a scarred hand, motioning them to stop. Like the Shalewood, this place was silent. A sense of danger knotted his gut as the young Ven looked around for any sign of the villagers. All the chimneys were free of smoke. No chattering voices or the grinding of mill wheels. No clucking of hens, nor the bellowing protests of cattle. Venturing through the gates still on horseback, they made their way through the sodden streets, passing the many low round stone buildings and wooden outhouses. Tanning pits still filled with lime, though no hides were to be seen. A smithy's workshop, the forge cold and dead, tools and ore lay unattended. Kreer stopped, centre of a small crossroads. Ahead lay the road back into the woodland, passing by a tavern. It was large for a village this size, the signpost displaying a black bull's head, and beneath it, the obvious name to accompany such an emblem. The other path seemed to lead to the village graveyard. Sigmir was curious to look inside. After all, people or not, this was something new for him. It wasn't as grand as the stoneworks that made up the temples of his gods, but the way the wood had been crafted was simple yet beautiful, unlike anything he'd seen in his own village.
"I feel it too," Braedic said to Kreer. She nodded and pointed down the road, a small signpost with the marking of some kind painted on its front panel. Though it was old and flaked, the symbol looked religious to him. Yet for what faith, Sigmir could not say. "It's a symbol for the graveyard, Sigmir," Braedic put in, noticing the young Ven's confusion.
"What is a graveyard?"
"It's where the dead are buried."
"My people, we burn our dead. The wolves would dig them up otherwise."
"That makes sense in the wildlands. But here in Arteria, they worship Lunarin, the Star Mother. Well, not everyone does, but regardless, they bury their dead, as they believe stars will fall from the heavens, and the dead will be risen again, renewed by the love of their goddess. The tears of the stars. Beautiful, really."
"Ag'Valen would never allow the stars to fall. They light the path to the Shadowlands. How would the spirits find their way there without them?"
"Yes, well, Ag'Valen or Lunarin aside, myself and the Lady Kreer may have sensed something up ahead. I would tell you to stay here and wait, but I don't know if that's any safer. Just keep close and stay on your guard. If I tell you to run, then you must do so. Is that understood?"
"Yes, I... More demons?"
"I'm afraid so."
The road dipped ahead, sloping down at an unexpected yet natural incline. The hillside was facing away from Eastwald and was overgrown with thick tufts of grass and weeds. Dips and uneven ground made walking anywhere but the muddy pathway an accident waiting to happen. Being forced to dismount a quarter of the way as the path narrowed into a route inaccessible on horseback, they fixed their mounts to an old hitching post which had clearly been placed there for this very reason. Sitting at the foot of the hill they now descended, Sigmir caught a glimpse of stoneworks similar to the cairnstones his people used to mark the deeds and names of their honoured ancestors. These instead were all cut into star-like forms. Some with as many as 16 points, others, much lesser skilled work, had only 5. Yet many looked to be very old, moss covering them almost entirely, and they sat at the foot of freshly dug mounds of soil. A path led directly through the centre of the graves, towards a stone building which looked to have been built around the opening of a cave mouth. As they neared, the young Ven gagged. The stench of rotten eggs, coupled with the smell of decaying meat, wafted into his nostrils.
Ugh, I smell bodies. But these are not the ones in the ground, surely.
Though these graves are fresh, it seems like it's coming from in there. Braedig pointed to a slightly rusted iron lattice. It blocked the doorway, leading on into the building ahead.
Are we going in?
Kriya nodded her answer to Sigmir. She clenched her fists, sending a trickle of blood from between her fingers. Within seconds, a low white flame encompassed her hands, the crimson fluid fueling her magics. Sigmir stepped forth, grabbing at a leather strap, which seemed to be a makeshift handle for the gridwork door. As he neared, the smell grew stronger, causing the Venish youth to balk, the remnants of his meagre breakfast spattering at his feet. Wiping his mouth dry, he turned away to spit the last of the vomit into the graveyard. Immediately, he worried his action was disrespecting the long-dead villagers.
Are you all right there?
Braedic asked, his hand clasping the young Ven's shoulder. Sigmir nodded his answer. Standing up straight and sighing, he nodded again, gesturing for the two to lead on. Cobbled stones made up the floor leading down into the belly of what appeared to be a makeshift jail. The floor was wet with brown water, no doubt run off from the graveyard above. Were it not for the glow of Kray's magic, they would have been in total darkness. With the icon of magics leading the way, her fists aglow in a bright but seemingly harmless flame, they delved deeper. Reaching the end of the hallway, the path ahead forked. Going straight on led into a large room filled with cells, which Kriya decided to go down first. The stench in here was stronger than outside, as was the buzzing of flies that echoed all around, a constant drone playing accompaniment to their actions. There was no doubt the cause of the foul aroma was to be found nearby. And so it was. In each of the cells, bodies had been piled, women and men alike, small children and adolescents, even dogs and field animals had been left down there to rot in a horrific scene of slaughter. It was then Sigmir realized the water he'd been walking in was instead a small river of blood that swamped the cobbles beneath his feet.
This is foul indeed.
Nezrakar filth, there is no doubt. Did the attackers of Isaac's Hills come here? Or were they from here? Or just passing through? Galador, watch over us all. I fear things are worse than we know.
A noise unsettled them. Within a heartbeat, Braedic had both his blades in hand. Instinctively, Sigmir crouched low, as Kriya's hands, now held at shoulder height, crackled with blue energy, matching the light in her fierce eyes. The noise came again, a muffled moan in the distance. Searching for the source, the trio made their way towards the corridor leading off. Here the walls were different, as if built in an earlier time. Uneven stones acted as makeshift bricks, arching above them. The corridor ended in a wooden door, which seemed to move back and forth slightly, as if caught in a draft, as though the room beyond was breathing in and out. Reaching for the handle, Kriya pulled on the door. It swung wide with little effort, smashing into the wall beside it. Without warning, a rush of energy surged forth from within the room, crashing over them like a wave, sending Braedic and Sigmir to their knees in its powerful psychic assault. Kriya appeared unaffected and helped the pair up.
What was that? I don't know.
Ahead of them, their eyes were drawn to the center of this round chamber, for there in the middle was a font. A skinny thing with a deep ball atop a slender plinth of alabaster, yet the ball was overfilled with dark blood. Days old and thick, it had dripped down the pure white stone, staining it in the process. Four torches, affixed to the wall, lit the room ahead. Each burned low and threatened to gutter out, yet the combination of dim light lit the room enough for them to see. Strewn upon the floor, five bodies in dark robes lay dismembered, each laying in a pool of their own dried, sticky blood. Two of them had been decapitated. A third, whose robes had been near shredded, looked near split in two. At first they had not seen him, but as she moved in, hiding behind two of the bodies, was a skinny man. Naked but for a breechcloth, his back was riddled with lash marks, and his ribs stuck out too far to be healthy. As she neared, Kriya saw he was still breathing, but it was shallow at best. Motioning for the other two to help, they each lifted the near corpse of a man up into a sitting position. The man's wild chestnut hair and unkempt beard were streaked with grey. His cheekbones looked sharp and jutted out beneath his bruised and sunken eyes.
"It's amazing he's alive at all. He looks in a worse state than those bodies back there."
"Here, give him this."
Sigmir handed over his water skin. The stopper already off, he spilled some of its contents in the process of passing it over.
"Can you hear me, my friend? Do not fear, you are safe with us."
Braedic poured the liquid onto the man's lips to no reaction.
"Is he too far gone?"
Sigmir asked.
"It looks that way."
Though they did not see it, Kriya shook her head. She cradled the man in her arms, snatching the skin away from Braedic. Tilting his head back, she dripped water onto his mouth. The steady bead caused the man to rouse. He licked his lips instantly and instinctively went to wipe it away before opening his eyes fully. As quickly as he was capable of, he grasped at the skin, gulping it down. His eyes closed in an expression of ecstasy.
"It's no arterial red, but that's the best damn tasting water I've ever had."
His blue eyes now wide, the man smiled, his skin cracking with laugh lines and wrinkles.
"We had thought you dead. We are happy to see you are not."
"That makes two of us, lad. Where?"
It was then the man noticed Kriya's eyes. He pulled away from her in fear, yet she only smiled in response.
"You have nothing to fear. We are not cultists."
"Forgive me, but I've seen eyes like that before, and I'd like us not to be reminded of them."
The man said, clearly shaken.
"This is Braedic, and she is Kriya. Lady Kriya, icon of magics. Braedic is her squire, and they are both knights of the Order of Argent."
"And that's Sigmir, our most excellent of heralds. That's the last time I allowed you to do the introductions. We are from the Argent Order, and you are safe under our protection, Master..."
"The name's Orin. Orin of Vale of Glass."
In the last remaining hour of nightfall, Isaac's Hill was shrouded in a dense cloud. Though for the first time in an eternity, this was not Nasanhurunvak, the breath of the gods as the natives called it. No, this was the billowing smog of a burning settlement, or at least what now remained of one. The palisade, the gates, the smithies, the tanners, the hunting hall, the elder's lodge, as well as the temple of Yindos, Varenher, Kaleen and Argvalin, all destroyed by fire. Every home torn down and set aflame. Any inhabitants were dragged out, herded like beasts and bound hand and foot. Some were slaughtered on spot. Others left to burn alive within the infernos that had once been their dwellings. A gathered mass stood to watch it burn. Hundreds, each different in height and stature, different in age and gender, yet all wore the uniform regalia of Nezrakar's faithful. Prisoners sobbed from their bindings as gibbets were erected around them. The captives were then forced inside, and buckets of boiling pitch thrown over them, causing howled cries of agony as their skin blistered and burned. Those that protested were ran through or beaten to a bloody pulp. One man had been dragged by his feet, hauled up to a nearby tree, and slowly flayed alive. And all the while, within the bonfire that was once Isaac's Hill, strange forms moved within the fire. Five hulking men, broad and tall, encased in plate and mail, their armour dulled by ebon paint. Dark feathers and furs trimmed their battle dress as they moved in unison. Facing straight ahead, though no eyes could be seen beneath their featureless helms, what little of their skin was exposed was scarred with ritualistic tattoos made in the process of rubbing soot into an open wound. A painful technique, but a necessary one, for these men were not of the living, but instead were revenants. These monstrous undead warriors still retained their martial prowess from life, yet their minds were devoid of emotion, empty of all drive but the will of their creator and master, the beast they now encircled. Ceasing in their movements, the guardians stopped, the front two stepping aside as if to unveil the grotesque creature who commanded them from within the encirclement. His skin, pale as if drained of blood, a torso thin and emaciated, with ribs protruding at unnatural angles, a sternum which burst from its flesh in three dark mounds. Thin arms as pale as mountain frost were black from the wrist down to his unkempt fingernails. His legs, covered by apron-like leather skirts the colour of wet soil, and spattered with long dried gore. Six grey horns curved from behind his head, finishing in front of his hideous face. Lips, curled like the receding smirk of a corpse, showed slick gums, the colour of charcoal. His eyes glowed with a pale blue light, deathly and otherworldly. They shone from within the depths of his sunken eye sockets.
Upon this dawn, we mark a new beginning. Here in the heartlands of the Fen, we shall create a symphony of suffering, a chorus to herald the coming of our great master. For here, beneath the soil of Arn, a hound awaits its unleashing. Clear away the wreckage.
Without pause, the swarm of dark robes began to usher forth their captives. The ground which had once been the foundations for the temple of Varenher, the two-headed wolf god of the Vanish Folk, was now little more than a pit of scorched earth. Beside the pit, a huge circle had been gouged into the soil, trenches dug and lines ploughed to make up the intricate curves of a huge glyph. Freshly removed bones, bloodied and unclean, made up the inner pattern. A central circle, quartered by four lines which ran out from the centre in the directions of the compass, each ending in a gathering of skulls. In groups of 20, the captives were brought forth, kicked into position or forced at weapon point. Adults and babe alike were dragged to the verge of this gigantic glyph. With his bodyguards in tow, the master made his way into the centre of the glyph.
Once I begin, nothing can cause interruption. This
is upon you all to do your part. Those that do not will find their bodies torn upon the wheel and their souls extinguished. Let none feign ignorance of this decree. Bring them forth.
Wait, my lord! A rider comes this way!
The hammering rumble of hooves gave sign of the approaching rider as the horde of robe acolytes cleared a path. Two riders sat atop the mud-covered stallion, its flanks awash with foamy sweat as well as its muzzle. The leading rider brought the beast to a halt, leaving it panting on the verge of exhaustion. The passenger, a much smaller figure, draped in sodden furs, accompanied the man, a man whose garb was still clearly expensive, even when covered in mud.
My lord, Captain.
Geroff, you are late.
My apologies, my lord, but there has been a complication, my lord.
Kazelan's face flinched in anger.
Our operation in Eastwold has been brought to a halt.
It matters little in the grand scheme of things. And who is this you bring before me?
This is Los, my lord. The boy I spoke to you about.
Look at me, child. Does my appearance upset you?
I only fear your power, my lord.
How wise of one so young. Good. Geroff tells me you have met with Morgran.
I have, my lord, in the woods.
Tell me, why did she not devour you?
She said I'd potential.
She saw him murder his friend's sister in the woods.
Oh, how very much like her.
My lord, I must speak to you about...
Then speak.
One of the hunters, a man from Vale of Glas, he...
What of him?
The ritual. It would not work. It did something to him. He murdered my men.
What do you mean it did something to him?
We had him there, ready, the knife at his throat, and he just changed.
Seeing opportunity in the distraction caused by the scene ahead, one of the Venish tribesmen broke free from the grasp of his captor, headbutting the cultist from beneath and sending him to the floor. The tribesman snatched up a serrated blade and dashed towards Kazelan. His eyes blood-crazed, his mouth wide with a roar of hate. From one of the newly erected gibbets, a woman screamed a name. Gorxel. As Kazelan spotted the man, he held up one hand to halt his followers, and the other, a contorted mass of fingers, his hand igniting in black flame. The escapee dropped to his knees, struggling to stabilize himself, reaching out with the blade as saliva spread forth from his painful shout. The Venish man seemed to spasm and jerk, and then, within seconds, he was engulfed in flame, screaming as a pain unlike any other ravaged his body. He writhed in suffering. Kazelan turned his gaze towards the cultist, who was now stumbling back to his feet. Without a signal, the necromancer's bodyguards came as a pair, snatching the acolyte up and restraining him as he fought for his freedom.
You will take his place,
Kazelan spoke to his follower, whilst pointing at the smouldering pile of ash that was once a man named Gorxel.
Enough of this! The ritual will commence. Bring them forth. Start with their hands.
With a dismissive wave, Kazelan re-entered the circle. The prisoners were dragged kicking and screaming forth. A second row of acolytes held them as hammers and blades were brought down upon the bound hands of the captives. Howls of torment echoed around like the song from some tortured choir. As within the glyph, a faint purple fire began to spread along the edges. Kazelan, the necromancer, weaved his fingers in the air as black, shadow-like flame wrought sigils and wards around him. A quiet rumble grew louder, as the ground began to shake, the bones rattling in their formation. Row after row of prisoners was brought forth and tortured. Their hands lopped off, then their feet. Thigh bones smashed before finally being beheaded. The once foundation of Varenhur's temple was filled up with dismembered bodies, the ground slick with blood and internal organs. Leaving the circle, Kazilan shook as the power of his malevolent god coursed through him like a wild river breaking through the boundaries of a dam. From within the gore-filled pit, a huge pair of grey-skinned hands affixed with ebon claws rose up from beneath the bloodied corpse pile. The hands reached out, grasping at Ven and cultists alike, crushing them inside its gigantic grasp. A second pair burst out, sending viscera and blood in an eruption, covering all present. Its four hands now used the ground to pull the rest of its body up. Emerging from this twisted charnel house, a head, its dark grey skin with ears like that of a bat, stuck out from the side like wings. Its face, skull-like in appearance, with six deep-set yellow eyes. The beast's jaw strong and wide, underneath and atop, ridged with short black horns. Four huge tusks jutted upwards from its maw, a maw which now opened wide as it bellowed a god-shaking roar into the sky of the coming dawn.
That was Chapter 1, Part 8, The Raver and Dark Saga. You can support the podcast by leaving a rating or review on iTunes, Podchaser, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Please join me on Twitter at Averin Podcast, all one word, for the latest news and updates on content. A Patreon is coming with exclusive content in the form of Tales from the Scrolls, Ancient Lore of Averin. Part 1 can be found in your feed. All music in this episode was created by Kevin MacLeod. You can find Kevin's amazing work at incompetech.com. Kevin also has a Patreon, and there will be links to support him there in the show notes. Some sounds were taken from freesound.org. All music is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. Thanks for listening.